Blog Talk Radio.
Never know when it's over. Will you be standing when it's over? And to my crew from the over, what you gonna do when it's over? Will you be here for your child to have a shoulder?
Gonna be family and you ain't nothing without them. If you're married, show her your lover, put none before. Yeah, we fuss and fight, but them my sisters and brothers. I got the game from my daddy, he taught me how to hustle. First time I ever served some time in jail was with my uncle. Damn, I was hot, the cops stayed on my bumper when I should have been at home getting ready for school in the morning. But I was always there, even though I was yawning, trying to sell the candy I sold at the store on the corner. Lost at my house again in a stolen car with my friends. Well, I end up in prison, my brother got killed. Then we both had kids when we was down serving beers. Still blessed to pick up a phone, call my mom and dad. To make a long story short, if it quacks, then it's a duck. Keep your mind out them streets and your head in them books. Come on with the hook.
For the people.
Can't read the language of Egyptian mummies, and a flag or a moon, and can't find food for the starving tummies. Pay no mind to the youth, cause it's not like the future depends on it. But save the animals in the zoo, cause the chimpanzee, them a make big money. This is how the media villages, on TV the picture is, savages the villages, and the scientists still can't explain the pyramids. Evangelists making a living on the videos of ribs of the little kids, stereotyping the image of the images, and this is what the image is. You buy a car, keep on, and all of a sudden you are set at Indiana Jones. And I see about the gold, and see about the scrolls, and even the bird bones. Some of the worst paparazzi I've ever seen and I've ever known. Put the words on this place that the world can see, and it's all that we'll ever show. So the ones in the west will never move east and feel like we'll be at home. Get tricked by the beast, but the way them are gonna flee when the monster is fully grown. Salamonic lineage where them feet can defeat and them could have never clone. A spiritual DNA that's built in my soul and I will forever own, Lord.
Yeah. Savali, that's patience. What the old folks told me. Can you get with that? Discovering the world before this world. A world buried in time. Uncovered with rhymes. It gets no realer.
We born not knowing. Are we born knowing all? We growing wiser. Are we just growing tall? Can you read thoughts? Can you read palms? Can you predict the future? Can you see storms coming? The earth was static. You went too far, you would fall off. Now the earth is round. If the shape changed again, everybody would have thought lost. The average man can't prove of most of the things that he chooses to seek of. And still run research and find out the root of the truth that you seek of. Galas teach in universities and claim that they're smart and cunning. Tell them find a cure when we sneeze and that's when their nose starts running. And the wrist gets fixed up when we get cut. Wanna heal them broken bones in the bush with the wet mud. Can you resign? Can you restart? Can you make peace? Can you fight war? Can you milk cows, even though you drive cars? Can you survive against all odds now?
It's crazy. When you feed people the truth, you don't know how they're gonna react. You're scared of wrongdoers. People that's just ignorant. Scared of the truth. We patient. For now. Who wrote the Bible? Who wrote the Quran? And was it a lightning storm that gave birth to the earth and then dinosaurs were born? Who made up words? Who made up numbers? And what kind of spell is mankind under? Everything on the planet we preserve and can it. Microwave it and try it, no matter what, we'll survive it. What's you? What's man? What's human? Anything along the land we consuming. Eating, deleting, ruining. Trying to get paper. Gotta have land, gotta have acres. So I can sit back like Jack Nicholson, watch niggas play the game like the Lakers. In a world full of 52 fakers, gypsy seances, mystical prayers. You superstitious, so over your shoulders, make a wish for the day, cuz like somebody got a doll of me. Sticking needles in my artery, but I can't feel it. Sometimes like part of me, but I got a real big spirit. A fearless. Don't you try to grab hold of my soul. It's like a military soldier, 10, 7 years old. I held real dead bodies in my arms, felt their body turn cold. Oh, why are we born in the first place if this is how we gotta go? Dang. To all the wisdom and knowledge seekers of the world. Savali. Patience.
follows. The rule here is simple, and this is my motto. You get it how you get it, homie. First be a logo. Get you a house built. Keep you a dollar note. Cause when it's over, no cheese to borrow. You fuck around, get indicted, ain't no tomorrow. My homie locked up, this 6 years tight. But 6 years is nothing, cause this kid's life is off in a cage for the rest of his days. A price that he paid for the mistake he made. So I'm more focused, cause my lifestyle's broke. I got to get out, cause this fast life's over.
Justifies the fiends. Poverty and unemployment justifies the screams. The reason taxes pay for just to buy clean. 2006 would choose the size of me, but in the end he wasn't really what he tried to be. I never let the war justify me. I question how hard some of these cats really be. Cause real niggas don't speak, our actions talk more. Don't make me flip and turn these streets into a chalkboard. I do this for all the real niggas that smoke trees. The husband, players, pimps, and OGs. For the up and coming cats and the old schoolers. The ones that remember private stock and Calvin coolers. It's a struggle to make it. Keep pushing. See how far you can take it. Two eye or one eye navigated.
Fucking dick sucking, redneck, son of a bitch. All it takes is one pussy who ain't getting none to catch you on a dark street and put you to sleep. Dude was one beat at the store. He said, I ain't no hoe. He got clapped in the back of his throat. Woo! It didn't have to go like that. Believe me, mister. Someday, niggas gonna respect these pistols. Made a mistake, get out the way when a fool got the up. Try to get a motherfucker shot in the gut. And remember this before you gone, till the day that you gone. Greedy don't last too long. The secret is to win, jump out the game and have money for life. Not to stick around till you lose all your shit to the fight.
You got to be too strong and all the sin. You'll find peace in the end. Don't cry.
Why you all put the world for some shit? she fuck one of your people. Now you want to kill something, pull off you with OJ. If you ain't got the dream team and you ain't winning your case, I get up all in your face and call you a straight house nigga. I know you gonna press charges on me with my pistol off in your mouth, nigga.
It's all to maintain losing life mentality. If it be a trap, some life will come and hassle me. Gonna slam me down and wrestle me just to put on handcuffs and charge me with resistance when they told me throw my hands up. It's all to maintain losing life mentality. If it be a tragedy, then life will come and hassle me. Gonna slam me down and wrestle me just to put on handcuffs and charge me with resistance when they told me throw my hands up. Black man kill a black man. Black man kill a white man, they sentencing him to death. White man kill a black man, then scream about self-defense. Break it down to manslaughter with all of the evidence. Ever since I've been here, been nothing but sin here. I done backed about the game just to pursue my career. So I'ma say this loud and clear, motherfuck the white man. Ku Klux Klan talk shit, but they don't want to start shit. Niggas today ignorant, fessing my left generation. Squeeze triggers with no hesitation, when I count enough altercations. Rapping is my occupation, but I still ride with my pistol though, and drop the top low low so I can feel a wind blow. Pull up on side of white folks, smile, show every goal I got. Smoking on some sticky sticky, but y'all like to call it pop. Young black man calling shots, middle finger to all the cops. Suck a nigga dick pulling your Glock out for a traffic stop.
Here's all to maintain soldier life mentality. If it be a tragedy, then white folks come and hassle me. Gonna slam me down and grab me just to put on handcuffs and show me with resistance when they told me throw my hands up. Here's all to maintain soldier life mentality. If it be a tragedy, then white folks come and hassle me. Gonna slam me down and grab me just to put on handcuffs and charge me with resistance when they told me throw my hands up. Here's all to maintain soldier life mentality. If it be a tragedy, y'all know what they gon' do. Understand?
And these niggas out here talking about a nigga hating on them. What the fuck you talking about a nigga hating on you? Bitch ass nigga, you know who hating on you? DA and the judge hating on your bitch ass nigga. The police and all that type of shit, nigga. Fuck you talking about a nigga hating on you behind a hoe. A real nigga bad to piss out.
I got royalty inside my DNA. Cocaine quarter piece, got war and peace inside my DNA. I got power, poison, pain, and joy inside my DNA. I got hustle, though, ambition, flow inside my DNA. I was born like this, is born like this, immaculate conception. I transform like this, perform like this, which yells you a new weapon. I don't contemplate, I meditate, then off your fucking head. This that puts the kids to bed. This that I got realness, I just kill shit, cause it's in my DNA. I got millions, I got riches building in my DNA. I got dark, I got evil that rot inside my DNA. I got off, I got trouble, some heart inside my DNA. I just win again, then win again, like Wimbledon I serve. Yeah, that's him again, the sound that engine in is like a bird. You see fireworks and Corvette tires skirt the boulevard. I know how you work, I know just who you are. See, use a bitch, your hormones probably switch inside your DNA. Problem is, all that sucker shit inside your DNA. Daddy probably snitched, heritage inside your DNA. Backbone don't exist, born on side a jellyfish I gauge. See my pedigree, most definitely don't tolerate the front. Shit I been through probably offend you, this is Parler's oldest son. I know murder, conviction, burners, boosters, burglars, ballers, dead. Redemption, scholars, fathers, dead. With kids and I wish I was fed. Forgiveness, yeah. Soldier's DNA, born inside the beast. My expertise checked out in second grade. When I was 9, on sale motel, we didn't have nowhere to stay. At 29, I've been so well, hit cartwheel in my estate. And I'm gon' shine like I'm supposed to. Antisocial, extrovert, and excellent mean an extrovert. And absentness, what the fuck you hurt? And passiveness never struck my nerve. And that's a riff, gonna be this case. The reason my power's here on earth. Salute the truth and the prophecy. I got loyalty, got royalty inside my DNA.
This is why I say that hip-hop has done more damage to young African Americans and racism than racism. I live about my DNA. This is my heritage, all I'm inheriting. Money and power, the maker emeritus. Tell me something, you motherfuckers can't tell me nothing. I'd rather die than to listen to you. My DNA not for imitation, your DNA an abomination. This how it is when you in the matrix, at your bullets, reaping what you're sowing, stacking up the footage, living on the go and sleeping in the pillar, sipping from a Grammy, parking in the building, diamond in the ceiling, marble on the floors, peaches out the window, peeking out the window, baby in the pool, Godfather calls, only Lord knows. I've been going hammer, dodging paparazzi, freaking through the cameras, eating four daughters, Brock wearing sandals, yoga on the Monday, stretches in the van, watching all the snakes. Curving all the fakes, phone never own. I don't camera stakes, I don't compromise. I just penetrate, sex, money, murder. These are the breaks, these are the times. Level number 9, look up in the sky. Tennis on the way, tennis on the way, tennis on the way. Motherfucker, I got winners on the way. You ain't shit without a buddy on your belt. You ain't shit without a ticket on your plate. You ain't sick enough to put it on yourself. You ain't rich enough to hit the ladder skate. Tell me.
We always say the Black Panther Party that they can do the thing they want to do. Be back. I might be in jail. I might be anywhere. But when I leave, you can remember I said with the last words on my lips that I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am the people. I'm not the pig. You got to make a distinction. And the people are going to have to attack the pig. The people are going to have to stand up against the pig. That's what the pastors are doing. That's what the pastors are doing all over the world.
NWA board is in full effect. Judge Dre residing. In the case of NWA versus the police department, prosecuting attorneys are MC Ren, Ice Cube, and Easy motherfucking E.
Order, order, order. Ice Cube, take the motherfucking stand. Do you swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth to help your black ass?
You goddamn right.
But won't you tell everybody what the fuck you gotta say?
Fuck the police coming straight from the underground. A young nigga got it bad cause I'm brown. And not the other color, so police think they have the authority to kill a minority. Fuck that dick cause I ain't the one for a punk motherfucker with a badge and a gun to be beaten on. And thrown in jail, we can go toe to toe in the middle of a cell. Fucking with me cause I'm a teenager with a little bit of gold and a pager. Searching my car, looking for the product. Thinking every nigga is selling narcotics. You'd rather see me in the pen than me and Lorenzo rolling in a Benzo. Be the police out of shape, and when I finish, bring the yellow tape to take off the scene of the slaughter. Still getting swole of bread and water. I don't know if they fags or what. Such a nigga down and grabbing his nuts. And on the other hand, without a gun, it can't get none. But don't let it be a black and a white one, cause they'll slam you down to the street top. Black police showing out for the white cop.
father to get. Taking out a belief would make my day, but a nigga like Ren don't give a fuck to say.
Fuck the police.
When I'm playing with the trigger of an Uzi or an AK, cause the police always got something stupid to say. They put out my picture with silence, cause my identity by itself causes violence. So E with the criminal behavior. Yeah, I'm a gangster, but still I got flavor. Without a gun in the badge, what do you got? A sucker in a uniform waiting to get shot by me or another nigga. And with a gat, it don't matter if he's smaller or bigger. And as y'all know, with the gun, and if I'm rolling up the eight, he'll be the one that I take out, and then get away, while I'm driving off laughing, this is what I'll say, fuck the police.
Black power, black power, black power, black nation. You tuned in to In Defense of the People's weekly Tuesday night broadcast at 7 p.m. Central Standard Time, 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, with your host, People's Political Party National Chairman, Nat Turner, your co-host, National Minister of Defense, Brother Motherland, and myself, your engineer on the ones and twos, People's Political Party's National Minister of Communications, Sister Amina. Calling every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, 845-277-9266. Again, it's 845-277-9266. This is the People's Radio. Make sure you guys press number one to participate. Tonight's topic, prison industrial complex. I'm going to open up the line for our host, National Chairman Matt Turner. Black power, black power, black power. Can you hear me, comrade?
Yes, ma'am. Black power. Black power.
Black power, you're in the room.
Yeah, ooh, that's what's up. Yeah, we want to talk about the prison industrial complex tonight. It's quite a matter of fact, it's complex. It has an array of layers to it. So we're going to try our best tonight to, you know, give some kind of understanding of it, you know, to our people, you know, to the unpoliticized who don't necessarily understand the intricacies of it, but feel the brunt of the blow. And then these are, you know, what our elders in the 60s referred to as occupied colonies or occupied communities, you know, known as the urban areas, you know, urban black communities, the ghetto, you know, and what we mean by occupied colonies on the part of the, you know, the police, the so-called police that the Black Panther Party had renamed as the Pig due to a irreconcilable, contradictory relationship that the Pig had and still has with the so-called black community. And that's just one part of it. And I want to say this, you know, too, you know, those who are listening, if you want to, you know, call in, I mean, you know, listen, participate, question, comment, you know, press the one at the end of the queue, and, you know, we'll put you on. This is, as our Minister of Communication says, In Defense of the People Radio, for the people, you know, to heighten the political awareness of the collective black masses in North America, who are still a displaced nation out of Africa, regardless if it has been what some say is 400 years. We believe that we still connected with the continent in our spirit and also in our conditions from which we derive as a result of organized violence on the part of Europeans who had began to or were in the midst of the expansionist, the so-called expansionist era, venturing out into foreign lands, you know, and therefore confiscating those foreign lands using force, you know, at the same time professing to be Christians or followers, proponents or believers in the Jesus Christ, who was their Lord and Savior. So they had in one hand a sword. In the other hand, they had a Bible, and it conquered what is now known as the North American continent, the United States of America, which correctly is identified as a corporation. And, of course, a corporation has its many tentacles, its various branches, facets to it. And so tonight we want to give some understanding on the prison industrial complex. To begin with, basically, the evolution of the prison system in this country is, you know, beginning, its purpose, its goal, its design. You know, you go back to physical slavery, and at the time, these houses or facilities of penitent, as the Catholic Church so professes to be, committing a so-called act against the public citizenry, you know, during that time. And these violators of the so-called law, penal codes, you know, had to spend time in these controlled places. And it was a place that they can go and be penitent for their crimes. And this is why you have the word penitentiary, you know, in the Catholic belief system or the Christian belief system, the biblical belief system about being penitent for one's errors or crimes or what have you. And this is doing physical slavery. And so you see this early population, if you will, of majority whites at the time. And that, of course, you know, would get you to understand that there's a tiny minority of non-whites in these places of penitent, which became the model of today's penitentiary. Okay. Escalated 1,000 times more. And so when physical slavery was overthrown due to political ramifications between two groups of whites, you see this slow, noticeable change in these places of penitent. And of course, with this, you know, this wandering population of so-called free blacks in the 1860s, early 1860s, mid 1860s, and post after that. So you know, there's a, and we have to, you know, we have to look at this, you know, from a angle that, you know, that, that in general that we haven't been taught about as black people, and understand that, you know, the history of our struggle, you know, how we emerged out of so-called emancipation. And so this post-physical slavery population began to take on a different dynamic. And what we can say as the neo-slavery, the recapturing of so-called emancipated blacks, you know, with the inauguration or the era of what we're told is the Reconstruction. And of course, you know, we are smart enough to understand or keen enough to understand and look at the word Reconstruction and place it in its proper context. It's just simply as that. You know, Reconstruction, it was a reconstructing of white male rule coming out of physical slavery. It's just basically what it was. But in the history textbooks in the class, we're told that it was the Reconstruction period, you know, the betterment, the new America. You know, we all can grow together and you know, all these different whatnots. But it was no more no less than a reconstructing of the class structure, the status structure, the racial structure of post-emancipation, you know, America, you see. And so that you have this population that is pretty much left on its own, as vulnerable as any other group that's out there that has nothing to stand on, nothing to build on, you know, just as show us a herd of sheep is vulnerable to a pack of wolves, you know, with no safeguards or no protection, you know, nothing to secure their safety, you know, as a herd of sheep, you see. And so there was a sister, old sister, who had wrote a book called The Criminalizing of a Race. And if I can remember, her name was Charshe McIntyre. Charshe McIntyre. And so I saw the, you know, the title of the book, and it, you know, the title of the book, you know, it grabs your attention, you know, like, you know, it strikes your curiosity. So you know, I bought that book and I read the book, and I was fascinated at her research, at her tedious, you know, in-depth research, and wondering how, like, where she get the, you know, the documentation, how she was able to accumulate these old records, you know. And we were just fascinated. And of course, you know, it did something to me, and I began to understand the criminalizing of our people in every sense of the word. Now, it just doesn't jump out of the ocean or just appear out of thin air. That requires a very sophisticated strategy and tactic, you know, which was applied, you know, in Reconstruction, you know, all the way into, you know, Jim Crow, out of the 60s into the 70s and the 80s, you know, and this huge influx of black prisoners, black and brown prison population, or non-white Anglo-Saxon Protestant prison population. You know, let me say this before I go further. Just for clarity, there's three industries, you know, and then we can tie together. This one specifically, the prison industrial complex, but there's also the military industrial complex and the medical industrial complex, you know, and of course, you know, the prison industrial complex, and they are interconnected. They're interrelated, you know. At first glance, you know, not necessarily, you know, you would think, you know, that these three different totally appearing, looking, even by name, you know, things have nothing, one has anything to do with each other. But when you look at the state, and what is the state? In essence, the state is the businessman, the politician, the businessman, the judge, and the police. So, as a combined force, see, and so this combined force is what orchestrates, the prison, medical, military, industrial complex. They all have a purpose, a goal to uphold and maintain and keep up the state, which is controlled, operated, directed, or the CEOs or the proprietors of white ruling class of this country. And of course, it's middle class functionaries, it's middle class white population, some would like to include the black middle class and so forth, as a sort of a pecking order, So you have this surplus population in the Reconstruction era, and how do you deal with this surplus population? And what is a surplus population? I've explained it before, but just to reiterate, the surplus population is the same thing as the surplus goods, so-called goods, in the production line, which is why you see at the end of summer, clothes that worn in summer are put on sale. They're put on sale to the public, half off, 60% off, whatever, and people rush there, and go and get stuff that they, that they saw when summer first started, a short sleeve, designer shirt by Prada. The shirt was $150. Now then the summer's rolling out, then it's a surplus. And so these shirts, that shirt goes on sale, and then you went and got the shirt for $60. And they weren't doing you any favor. They weren't showing customer appreciation. No, that's to sell you externally, outwardly. The reason they were doing it, because it was a surplus. It was an overproduction. It's a surplus. And so the surplus has to have some kind of value, but it loses monetary. It becomes a surplus, which means that it lost monetary value. Okay? And so they had to get what they to get out of it. You see? And so that happens every season. When winter time's over, all the big coats that, you may have seen in the stores, what have you, and it's just constant cycle. That's the capitalist mode of production, or the last bastion or last line of defense in the so-called clothing industry. So it's a surplus of clothing. So those of us who've been to the big shopping malls and the big time stores, you go and you see like Dillard's. You go in Dillard's and you see stuff stacked up on copper stuff. One has started off with a little, maybe a little green tag or what have you, and it had the discount. Then they put a red one on top of that, and it's further, discount. So they had to do something with that. So when physical slavery ended, that's what we became. We became a surplus population. We no longer had any value, any material value, because the material value was what producing. For the planters, for the plantation owners, for the those who exploited the free labor of enforced enslaved black people, a black production line that received no residual in return for its labor. Okay, so therefore we became valueless, to the market. So something had to be done to this population. As any other thing, like I explained with the clothes, and so this was called a surplus population. You see, and so the surplus population, to recapture the surplus population, give me 1 second. Yeah, okay, I'm back. That was somebody inquiring about something. Something had to have been done with this population, lest this population become a growing problem, on its own now, no longer under the rule of physical thumb of a slave master. So it's out there now in the world. And so one way to do it was to create a new and innovative way to recapture former slaves, you know, to, you know, recapture them in under the system of slavery. And of course, you look at the Constitution and what do you see? You still have this amendment, you know, on declaring crimes, the penal code of crimes and servitude or what have you, make up for say crime, the right to impose, you know, render services out of those who committed crimes. And so this thing about the 13th Amendment. Okay, so you start seeing this change in the prison population, in reference to the percentage of whites and blacks, you know, and during that time it would proportionately fit, you know, this thing now. Back then, whereas today is, you know, disproportionately black people, you know, 13% of the population, but they disproportionately represent, you know, more than half, you know, 70% or 65% of prison, like what have you, you know. And so that was part that was a new way to recapture this former slave population. Went them back in the servitude and exact out of them physical labor. Mm-hmm. And so such things like homeless, well, you know, in a sense homelessness, but more sophisticated terms like vagrancy, loitering. You know, these became excuses where they could round up, you know, the former slaves again. And so vagrancy was against the law. Loitering is against the law. You see, so this is the evolution of the prison industrial complex, you know, featuring nine whites who are a controlled population for population control, you know, neo-slavery, you see. And so from that, you go into the Jim Crow era. And of course, all these trumped up charges during the Jim Crow era. You know, of course, the number one trumped up charge was rape. You know, black men accused of rape, raping white women. And of course, you know, the most widely known was the Emmett Till murder. You know, people's meting out the, you know, being the judge, jury, and the executioner. But it was the alleged Emmett Till of thing of Emmett Till having, you know, flirted or whistled at a white woman. You know, so these are attempts or coming up with innovative ways to recapture the black population coming out of slavery and on into to Jim Crow. Now, if you look at Louisiana, what you have is the Angola plantation, which is supposed to be the largest maximum prison in the United States of America. And the name Angola, of course, deriving from the country of Angola in West Africa, from where a lot of the Africans were kidnapped and brought to America to serve the capitalist system, to become part of the foundation or the establishment of the capitalist system as we know it today. Okay. Like I said, just to, you know, set a sort of a backdrop to the what is now known as the prison in industrial you know, complex that we have today. out of the, you know, out of the the 60s, you know, you and on to the, you know, to the 70s, what you see is this government program or agenda to inaugurate this so-called war on drugs, okay, which was, you know, first instituted or claimed on the part of Richard Nixon. His state of the address, declaring you know, a war on drugs. We see that as part as a chemical war against black and brown people in particular. Also in the 60s, what you had is these operations that were carried out by the CIA, you know, in particular the operation referred to as MH Chaos, which had its, you know, political ramifications due to the conditions that were taking place, you know, in America at that time. You know, the so-called civil rights movement, the war in Vietnam, but in particularly and most fiercely, to be more most fear was the Black liberation movement, with it evoked Black power, you know, shouts of Black power and liberation from a cruel system, being the descendants of people who were brought here from America, I mean from Africa to America, you know, to build up the system. During that period, there's no coincidence that Nixon would declare a war on drugs, because at the same time, this is when the influx of the heroin explosion, you know, manifests itself on a part of the CIA. And this is no, you know, some, you know, fantasy, made up conspiracy. You know, has nothing to do with that. As a matter of fact, Nixon had an assistant or a counsel who, you know, was put in charge of dictating the area of domestic affairs under Nixon. And his name was John Ehrlichman. I've mentioned him before under the guise of a drug czar, you know. But, you know, they had a department that dealt with domestic affairs. And part of that strategy was the influx of heroin, you know, to combat the anti-war movement, to combat the Black liberation movement, you know, create static, you know. And so the many years and more, you know, after this Ehrlichman served, you know, decades later, he had spoken to this journalist, this is an investigator. And according to the journalist investigator, the Ehrlichman told him, you know, he like, well, when it got to the drug influx, you know, he had said that Ehrlichman had admitted that the heroin, the drug influx into the so-called ghetto, you know, the urban environment was, you know, indeed a strategy to keep the Black community at odds, to keep the Black community, you know, in static, you know, due to its potential to mobilize and become that population that could topple the system, you know. And so this is the 60s and the 80s. I mean, the 60s and the 70s that we're talking about here. And so creating the conditions that would legitimize the prison system, you know, that would legitimize the prison industrial complex. See, and what is the prison industrial complex but a control factor, you know, population control to keep the white ruling class safe. You know, some people refer to it as the warehousing of America. But specifically, you know, you see that this is a clear focus, a target, the black and brown populations of the so-called urban environments in this country, you know. As I said about Nixon's drug war, and his man, the strategy to offset the population, the contradictions at that time, you know. And so out of the prison industrial complex, there's this an escalation in the furtherance of it. And what I mean by that is what is referred to as the supermax, you know, the supermax penitentiary, the super maximum unit, strategically located, as a matter of fact, throughout the country. For instance, you have what's called the ADX supermax in the middle of the desert. You know, in the middle of the desert, you know, Florence, Colorado. You know, another one, which you have is Marion, Illinois, which in the early 80s, as a result of the attack of two prison guards who were killed, it was one of the first prisons that was converted into a supermax. You know, and so of course, in the supermax, you have this apparent design for certain criminals, you know, the more violent criminals, the more lethal criminals, you know, the, you know. And so the control units, being in solitary confinement, you know. And as we speak today, of course, you know, solitary confinement, the control unit, 23 hours a day on lockdown and only 1 hour allowed out of your so-called cell. And as we speak today, we have author Ozone Wallace, who is currently held as a prisoner of war, who is experiencing the 23-hour lockdown method, tactic that is used in the so-called supermax. And of course, with the supermax, you can also observe or look at the fact that these supermaxes are also built, of course, in, you know, in certain areas or even rural, like more near rural like areas. And what a few of us understand is, you know, it actually creates, you know, jobs or employment for whites, you know, who had been having a time of it with the class differences with the rich whites. And at the same time, you have to look at the demographic factor of these areas where the so-called prisoners are counted as part of that state's population. And of course, that has something to do with the voting, you know, tactic and strategy to increase one's state's population and to count the prisoners as part of their population. And of course, in the local community, these areas are federal monies that is meted out to these, you know, to these areas. And so here, what you have in essence is that whites who are benefiting from the larger black and brown prisoners of war, you know, and this is how, you know, capitalism works. This is how capitalism operates. In the meantime, you have whites are, you know, displaying these attitudes towards, you know, prison population and you know, the ghetto, but they have no problem benefiting from, you know, the same people that they, you know, that they opposed, you know, and that's what the Supermax prisons, you know what I'm saying? How do you, let's say, you know, legitimize the prison industrial complex? You know, how do you legitimize a prison industrial complex? Well, of course, you know, when you building these supermax prisons, supposedly designed for certain violent offenders, the one thing is creating an avenue, you know, to where this supermax can be filled up with criminals, with, you know, those who committed crimes, you know, against the state, you know. And of course, you know, we say that on purpose for a purpose, you know, and that is how the state looks at it. But you, how do you build a supermax in the middle of the desert and then fill it up with prisoners? And I'll never forget this meeting I was in, and I've mentioned this before. This meeting I was at you know, Loyola, what used to be, you know, the Loyola University Law Clinic. You know, in their library, and the campus library, and you know, we were sitting around this long table, and there were certain persons in there from the you know, the so-called prison, and a few other brothers, one or two, three brothers, whatever, from you know, these programs, these reintroduction, you know, back into the society programs. That were in there, and older brother who was my comrade, who had done about 19, you know, summers in Angola Penal Colony himself, and he had told me about that meeting, and he, you know, he wanted me to, you know, go to this meeting with him, and I was sitting in the meeting, and so, you know, we was all going around, and we, you know, just, you know, we was talking about, you know, reform and ex-offenders and, you know, what have you, you know, reintroducing them to society through programs, to find them jobs and employment, record expungement, you know, different whatnots and stuff like that. And I'll never forget the one white boy that was sitting in this meet. And it's the thing, you know, that we were saying. And, of course, you know, I was, you know, kind of brutal, you know, with my viewpoints. But I never forget this white dude said this, that he said, well, I have to tell y'all, he said, you know, I have a buddy of mine that works at the courts. And so I called, you know, I called him time to time. Hey, man, it's been, it was a while since we talked, reconnected. The hurricane had an effect on everybody, people displaced and shit like that. And he said, we'd call this buddy over there and ask him how's things going over there. Well, how's things going over there? And he had said that his buddy had told him it's a fucking disaster. You know, so what he thought he was saying was that they were not, you know, rebuilding, you know, that, you know, FEMA wasn't coming through with the money, or somebody was, you know, doing whatever with the money, but nothing wasn't getting done. And he said, no, he said, that's not it. He says the prison is not filled up. And that's what he meant by it's a fucking disaster. You see? And that is the basic law and rule of the prison industrial complex. And of course, the prison industrial complex, like I said, is an extension, it's an arm, it's the wing of the state. And the prison industrial complex role and duty and job is to control those populations that the state is in contradiction with. that the state is opposed to, that, you know, that the state's whims, the state's ambitions, its ideas, and, you know, whatever, you know, is opposed to, you know, a certain population. And so that is the prison industrial complex's role. And of course, an industry, you know, commercial industry. You know, you have to take into account certain things as employment, you know, things of that nature, you know. And so so the goal and the role is to fill these prisons up. But you just don't go and just start kidnapping people and bringing them over there and filling them up. No, you have to create the condition, the material conditions, in order to justify, you know, filling this prison up. That's what you have to do. You know, that's what you have to do. So to justify creating this, the kidnapping, mass kidnapping of black and brown people, to displace disaffected peoples. You know, of course, you know the poor displaced whites. You know, in class contradiction with the white ruling class. So we have to create the material conditions in order to be able to do it. You see, so coming out of the 60s and in the 70s, what you had is you start seeing this these changes in black people had these gangs, these so-called civilized gangs, you know, in jobs and in you know, sufficient efficient job where you know the men can take care of their families, you know. In the 70s, the 60s and 70s, you know, we had large families. You know, I myself am the youngest of six. You know, and I had, you know, other families that, you know, lived in the area. That, you know, families are larger than ours, you know. And so, you had to create the conditions. And so you see the early 70s. In the early, like 73, it's no coincidence that the year 1973, you know, you have the establishment of another branch that I'll get into called ALEC. In 1973, you have the Rockefeller laws that were established in 1973, named after Nelson Rockefeller, who was governor of New York at the time. And so you create the material conditions in order to be able to achieve the results to fill these prison, to meet the requirements to fill the prison. You see, and so that's how it works. You know, so you see in the 70s, and all of a sudden, you know, the 80s come in, and you see it's a combination of things. But you see in you see this job. You know, this is the era of you know, outsourcing jobs, you know, going into the 80s. And of course, disproportionately, it affected, you know, non-whites more, you know, disproportionately. And so, of course, naturally, by all nature, you know, you're seeking alternatives of survival. And so it's an orchestrated effort. There's no coincidence that right around the time you see this outsourcing the jobs to foreign markets, to cheaper markets, because that's the capitalist mode of production. Spend less, make more. You know, profit motive is his religion. The, capitalism is his Bible. You see, and so it's no coincidence that you like simultaneously, like you see this disappearing jobs, you know, in the, you know, areas near and around the black communities, and all of a sudden you see this influx of drugs come in. There's no coincidence at all. Period. The heroin came in as a result of MH chaos operation on behalf of the CIA, on the part of the CIA. You know, it's a larger operation that not only, you know, was implemented in America, but an international operation. And of course, what was it designed to do? It was designed, you know, protect the state, you know, to keep the state from being harmed, you know, to slow down this tidal wave that was brewing against the state, you know. And so, when the 80s kicks in, you see what? You know, the so-called crack cocaine epidemic. You know, it's no coincidence at all. It's no coincidence. is an orchestrated effort to do what? To recapture the descendants now of former slaves, and to, you know, to recapture them, put them in neo-slavery because they know in the Constitution of the 13th Amendment. You see, and so you know, this modern effort now to pass legislation to abolish the 13th Amendment. You know, we have a brother on here, you know, that we want to bring into this. Our brother Larry Matt of Baton Rouge. Can you hear me, brother man? You on?
Black Power, can you hear me?
Yeah, right. Yeah, well, look, we want to give you, you know, the flow, and give a rundown on the latest legislation or the attempts to abolish it, and but go ahead and give our listeners a take on it. But introduce yourself and your organization and where you at, brother. Go ahead on Black Power.
Black Power from the north to south, to east to the west, from the womb to the tomb, from the top of my head to the soles of my feet. I appreciate y'all, People's Political Party, for holding it down, educating the people, serving the people. My name is Larry. I go by Brother Knowledge still to this day, still working for the people, still doing the thing that the people need. I'm the founder and the director of organization Evolve, Victory Over Louisiana Violence. You can find us on Facebook and Instagram. That is the community organization. But the organization I am with, I am the community director for Decarcerate Louisiana. It's also in conjunction with the national organization, Abolish Slavery National Network. And what we are doing, we are ending the exception clause in the 13th Amendment, which all these states ratified in 1865 in one form or one way or another. In Louisiana, we just recently passed through legislation in this regular session to end the exception to make slavery not as punishment for a crime. Now, each state has its own article and amendment, which in some form or fashion supports the 13th Amendment, which was put in by the federal government, put in by Congress in 1865. In Louisiana, it says slavery and involuntary servitude are prohibited except in the latter as punishment for crime. So if you get punished for a crime, if you are duly convicted and convicted of a crime, you can be treated as a slave. That is what they wanted. That's what they intended it to be. And it continued, and it still continues 157 years later, 159 years later, after the 13th, after the Emancipation Proclamation, the so-called. And I'm going to get into that for a minute, but to get to what the Decarcerate Louisiana has done, what we've done is educate people. We put forth the bill with Representative Edmund Jordan. It was put together by the executive director of the Decarcerate Louisiana, Brother Curtis Davis. Sister Amber, I had the pleasure of meeting him, I believe, for the first time or the second time just a few weeks ago when we were passing out clothes and feeding the people down there on Gumber Street. That brother spent 26 years in Angola, and when he got sentenced in 1996, he said, "There's no way that I'm going to let this keep happening, or how is this happening, and they're able to do this for free." So he started to read and educate himself. And he went forth, and when he was released, he not only released himself, he wrote a book called The Slave State, and he also went in and helped put forth different actions around the state as far as non-unanimous jury, which is still illegal, and it hasn't been retrofitted to current time. No one has been retrofitted to current time, so he helped with that. And he's also created Decarcerate Louisiana with a few other brothers on the inside. And so with that being said, last year We put forth the bill, and it didn't get through the first Senate committee. And this is how it goes. You put forth the bill, it gets approved, correct? And so after you put forth the bill, it gets to put in a certain committee. It goes to a city committee, then a Senate House, then the House committee, and then the full House. And then depending on if it's an amendment or not, it gets approved or vetoed, or can be vetoed by the government, by the governor, Governor John Bel Edwards. But since it's a constitutional amendment, it can't be vetoed by John Bel Edwards. So when it passed through the full House, it was automatically put on the November ballot for the people to vote. Now, I'm going to run down to what happened last year. Last year, you know, when you bring things up to these committees, these so-called lawmakers, and we know how the laws go, these laws are not meant for us. They are meant to enslave and prosecute the ones that they feel are inferior to their well-being, which is not true at all, because we know we are kings and queens. And when we brought forth the people that we had about 10 people testify, about 6 or 7 people testify. And when you bring up certain questions, you don't want them to answer them unless you're ready to really rebuttal that. And I believe that everyone wasn't ready for the different rebuttals. So when we went up, every black person that went up, they didn't ask us a question after we gave our testimony. The two white persons that we had go up, they drilled them and grilled them for like 10 minutes straight and tore them down. We was like, what the hell is this? And so they voted it down and didn't pass. So this next time, we had our game plan straight. We restructured ourselves. I said, look, when we go in here, we got to go straight for one message and one message only. And we decided on that. We go for one message and one message only. Slavery, there's nothing good about it, and let the people decide. Slavery is, and because of how they voted down, we made a mockery of them. We said that these people on this Senate committee were pro-slavery, and they wanted to keep slavery in Louisiana. So I'm pretty sure they saw that. I'm pretty sure they understood. And because of what was going on in the other states, like Utah and Colorado, which passed ending slavery in their states by the vote, by the people's vote in the last 4 years, we went and, like I said, we had that one message, and we regrouped ourselves. We came with a better game plan. We cut the fat on with the incarcerated Louisiana things that didn't need to be said. A different approach to, hey, look, let's let the people decide if slavery is okay or not. You know, this is 157 years of a mockery of making the Emancipation Proclamation seem like it freed everyone, and it didn't. So we went in, and because we had that game plan, they knew we were strong. It was only a few of us. They tried to cut us down before we even started this session. You know, people tried to fall off. They didn't want to put the bill in. One guy, he got arrested before he came to get a testimony. All this other mess was going on. People had to leave because they were prolonging these different bills because they really, really didn't want us to put this forth. And we went in, and because we had that one strong message, let the people decide, slavery and involuntary servitude is the same. We're not talking about anything else. We're not pulling anything else. We're not talking about commissary or anything. We're talking about the fair treatment of someone who makes a mistake. And with all the mistakes and the purposeful mistakes that the policing system makes, the judicial system makes, you know what I'm saying, what they do inside these prisons to us, something is wrong with it, and no one should be treated as being subhuman by no way, shape, or form. And because of that, and also because of what they did in Utah, they wanted to feel like they wanted to save themselves. So they added a small clause saying this does not interfere with the lawful administration of the criminal justice system, which just means that they're gonna be allowed to clean their beds and stay clean and so on and so forth and sweep under their beds and, you know, clean the kitchen when the kitchen is done. So they added that cause of safety to us, but we successfully went through all all two committees and two houses unanimously because we stayed on call, we stayed on message. We had some powerful people to come in and help us send emails to help us advocate. You know, we made it all the way through unanimously, all votes, no nays, no nays at all. So it was 13 yays in the first committee. I believe it was 95 yays in the Senate House. And I was saying, it's just unanimous. I can't remember all the numbers, but it was unanimous. No nays whatsoever. No one was against it because they knew what the message was. They found out who we were and what we were doing. And because of that, we're going to let the people decide if slavery and involuntary servitude is going to be prohibited, and it is. And I know the people will vote in the right direction. So right now we're putting together a 64 parish campaign to make sure the people are educated on what the Article 3, Section 1 of the Louisiana Constitution says, that slavery is still legal if you're punished for a crime. And we know how easy it is to commit a crime here. You jaywalk, you're going to jail. You don't return your library books, you're going to jail. You run over a mailbox, you're going to jail. You're black, you're going to jail. And no one should be subject to that type of treatment. And we've been working very, very hard to get with different advocate groups and anyone who wants to help promote a voting yes to support to prohibit slavery and involuntary servitude in Louisiana. And that's all I have, unless anyone has any more questions. If you wanted me to go into where it all started, where the 13th Amendment started, what it really means, and if you want to know what I think about the emancipation, what Frederick Douglass said about emancipation, what Abraham Lincoln did that nobody knew about, you know, I'll go into that, but other than that, that's all I really have at the moment.
I'm listening, and you know, the things that come to mind, you know, the way, you know, the capitalist things, you know, one thing about the capitalist, he's always morphing himself into something else. It's like a like a game of hopscotch. You know, I remember when I, you know, the little boys would watch, you know, my sister and I played this little thing called hopscotch where they, you know, start in one box and they jump in this and jump in that. Shit like that. That's what their mind's gonna stand two, three steps ahead of your opponent. And so they realize everything that's being done, you know, the challenges to a certain codes or whatever. And to take the Constitution. And the reason why we're going to struggle with them is because the Constitution was written for the white ruling class. There are some whites who understand it. You know, I've seen several books, several persons, you know, heard me talk and he come up to me and yeah, man, look, you have a point there, you know, blah, blah, blah. And then they go into the shit further. And so that's the cool part about it. The Constitution wasn't written for America. It wasn't written, you know, establish a new colony and people be free and have all these liberties and all that shit. It was written for the white ruling class to protect their interests. And that's what we're seeing today. And so it keep morphing this all over and over. So, you know, of course, what is the 13th Amendment? You know, briefly, you know, tell you know, the listeners, you know, the people who listen, you know, just tell them what the 13th Amendment is, you know, and give them a little brief history on it so they can understand, and then, you know, you're tying the whole shit together as to what this topic is tonight, you know, the prison industrial complex. But I wanted to make sure I gave you room, you know, the flow to bring that shit across so people can know, you know, what's being done, you know, by certain forces, you know, that they're struggling against the system in the state of Louisiana. But, you know, just give them rundown on what the 13th Amendment is.
All right. Thank you. So the 13th Amendment says neither slavery nor involuntary servitude except as a punishment for crime whereof, now that except, you got to pay attention, except is in every single constitution in the United States. They ratified it except. It is illegal except as punishment for crime whereof the party shall be duly convicted shall exist within the United States or any place subject to their jurisdiction. Okay. So it said it was illegal, except you were punishing them for a crime. Now, I remind you that it was put in 1865. And what was happening in 1865? The Civil War. So, but this, the emancipation was put in 1863, correct? So, but the Emancipation Proclamation, people don't read it. People sort of take those things, and like you say, brother, you always read it. You got to make sure that we tell our people you have to read these things, you know. So if you read the Emancipation Proclamation, it only applied to the states that were against the Union. It did not apply to the border states, and it did not apply to states into the Union. So the Union and the border states were still allowed to keep slavery, whatever form they had it in, but it only applied to the Confederate states. It didn't free everybody. So we got to say that out loud, and we have to be precise, you know what I'm saying? So they said, okay, how can we get this back? Now, people don't remember, people don't know, but one brother that I talk to quite often, he's been fighting against industrialized slavery for the last 25 years, and he gave me something to read that said that Abraham Lincoln himself, he had slaves, we all know that, but he put in different clauses of the 13th Amendment in D.C. about 6 or 7 or 8 different times on his own. That's why Congress was able to put in the 13th. They used what he was doing and put it into the full government during that time. So in 1865, he was still alive when that happened. That was 1865. He was still alive, and he okayed that because they wanted to find a way to continue to capitalize off of free labor and keep that superiority and to keep that white supremacy. Now, white supremacy is just an idea, and white supremacy is only white supremacy because of black slavery. That's when that came about, because white supremacy is just an idea. It's not a person. So we have to get rid of white supremacists, the persons who uphold it, and not just white supremacy. We're not fighting that. We're fighting against people, because an idea is that black slaves were the reason why they considered themselves superior. And one more point. Frederick Douglass also saw this happen. He made a speech calling the Emancipation Proclamation a stupendous fraud. Now, from 1866 to 1888, he toured America looking at what changed. What changed if they said that slavery was abolished? He said nothing changed. They said it was going to change, and it didn't. He went around for 22 years touring America, finding out and looking and finding out what was going on, and nothing changed. So Frederick Douglass knew it that back then, and we know it now. We have to stop saying out loud that the Emancipation Proclamation freed everyone, and it didn't. And we have to say slavery is still legal, and we have to say it collectively. We have to teach our children, teach our people. Brothers, y'all keep doing what you're doing. I definitely appreciate it. You know what I'm saying? So we're going to keep talking this freedom thing, liberation, real liberation, and that's what I have to say about the prison industrial complex, because it is, slavery is still legal, and we're going to end it one way or another.
Yeah, right on, right on, right, man. Look, appreciate what you do, you know. Yeah, right on. Go ahead, sister. You want to say something? Go ahead, sister.
Black power, black power. You know, I just wanted to thank the brother from getting on, you know, and tell him, you know, we appreciate him, and, you know, continue doing great work, not just for Baton Rouge. You know, you've been doing great work for Louisiana. You know, and we appreciate you, comrade. Also, the switchboard is lit up. You know, I just wanted to remind the people that this is the People's Radio. You know, if you have a question or comment for the brother, you can press 1. Also, remember to call in every night, every Tuesday night, same black place, same black time, 7 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Eastern, 845-277-9266. You have the floor, Chairman Black Power.
Yeah, Black, right on, right on. Yeah, but look, you took the words right out of my mouth. But look, I want to say this before I forget or it slipped my mind. The key, you know, when the brother pointed out, you know, 1865, when they put it in place strategically, strategically put in place for a desired goal. For a desired goal, they were forecasting the so-called Civil War, where the North or South, they were both industrialists. They were both part of the capitalist class. One was just ahead of the other. But they could reconcile after 1865. And this liberalism, conservative shit, you see. And so strategically put in place. So they were already anticipating, already looking ahead, by hook or crook, float or sink, you see. And it ties in exactly what I've been saying, you know, to recapture the African in a new guise, in a more sophisticated way. And so the birth of the prison industrial complex is expansion. It's expanding into the supermax, okay? Now it's expanding into the supermax, and to so-called thwart these efforts, these attempts to you know, to go after, you know, amendments or laws or what have you. Now we enter the part of prison privatization, the privatizing the prison, you see. And so who privatizes the prisons and for what purpose, you see? Look, this chess is not checkers. So as a counter move to going in and trying to dismantle it through legislation, they created their own counter move in the legislative branch, you know, in the judiciary branch, to keep their stated goal and purpose in mind. Once the black population became a surplus population, therefore it had no value to it, you see. And so you look at prison privatization, how did that come about? You know, the privatizing the prisons, using bills, certain bills, pushing it through. Whether, I mean, brothers and sisters, understand this, man. Understand this shit, man. This thing with this Republican Democrat shit, this historical thing, you know, in more recent times that the Democrats are more friendly to the Republic. Take a look at what's called ALEC. Take a look at what's called ALEC, and we'll see if that shit is true. You see what I'm saying? ALEC is an acronym for the American Legislative Executive Council. And what does ALEC do? ALEC is an arm and extension of the corporate world, of the corporate things who steer the state, who are now the steerers. The government is the corporation. The government is the corporation. Corporation is the government. That's fascism. You know, as defined by Benito Mussolini, who they was calling the fascists, that was going into World War II to take down, and him and Hitler was threatening world peace and democracy and all that bullshit. You see, and so ALEC is an agent, is a functionary of the corporation. So what has ALEC been doing? ALEC has been pushing legislation. Now, what year did ALEC start? ALEC was founded in 1973. And here's that, you know, that year again. The Rockefeller laws were written in the bill in 1973. And also 1973, the attempted political murder of Osiris Cole, Zay Shakur, and Sunday Ada Coley on the Jersey Turnpike, which ties back to the, you know, the Operation MH Chaos, which was designed to do what? Keep the population in the static. Let's say overthrow the state. And so out of that, in the 70s, the 60s, the 70s, and when I was talking about, you know, to create the material conditions in order to justify filling up the prison system, I mean, you know, to justify filling up the prison. So the privatization of the prison takes you in the way. It takes you into the corporate world. What does it take you into? It takes you into Wall Street, you know, the privatization of the prison industry, to go to the states and say, well, you know, we see how much it costs per prison. Well, we can actually make it cheaper for you. And so the whites bid on that shit, and I said, yeah, that's good. You know, and a lot of black people did too. A lot of black people did. I'm not talking about ignorant black people. I'm talking about, you know, and I don't like to use that word, but when I say, you know, I'm talking about people who are unconscious of the fact. You know, but there was also people who in general were conscious, you know, intellectuals, black intellectuals, or black people who consider themselves smart, you know, they ain't ghetto or whatever shit like that. They got some understanding. They can read a book, you know, whatever. They know big words like gentrification. And it was a lot of those that also bit that hook, line, and sinker, too. In order to create the condition that you have to do, you know, to fill them up. And so the corporations have they use ALEC in order to lend a hand to the prison industrial complex so they can get bills to go in their favor, so they can privatize the prison, so they can fill the prisons up. And then the prisoners do what? The prisoners become what again? They become commodities. The slaves were, in essence, commodities in physical slavery because they had value. Cotton has value on the market and the exchange. Soybean has value in the exchange market, and so forth and so forth and so forth. Gold, steel, aluminum, you know, whatnot, you know, rubber, you know, have value in the market, in the stock exchange, the trade. You see, and so this is how the ALEC is able to operate on behalf of the corporation to protect the interest, because they need what? A prison industrial complex to warehouse the dissidents. And I'm going to talk about that. We're going to get the scent. But
Black Power Chairman.
Go ahead, sister. What
Black Power Chairman, the switchboard is lit up, and we do have some callers that press 1.
Let's get them in.
Go ahead. I feel like you want to bring those callers on.
Yeah, let's get them on. Yeah. Who we got?
All right.
Yes, tell
us where you're calling, what's your name and where you're calling from.
Yeah, this is Brother Harold. I'm calling from New Orleans, Louisiana.
All right, what up, Brother Harold?
Black Power. Now, I want to ask you, since you're talking about the law enforcement, prisons and stuff like that. Now, I want to talk about the law enforcement. I remember, you should remember when Dennis Muhammad came to the city of New Orleans and he was trying to work with the police department, you know, and show them another way of how to correct handling with their citizens. Now, how would you go by doing this? Because I know everybody's different. And then I knew Dr. Collett, he was friends with a police chief, a black police chief up there in Georgia. So how would you go about handling that?
As far as just trying to win black people's faith back into the police after 500 years of terrorism of the overseer on the horse with the shotgun that got some advancements in science and technology and ended up in the pig cruiser and a semi-automatic weapon on his hip, and furthermore being given a taser to be given shock treatment, electrical vaults to his victims, those who they kidnapped on behalf of the state because the state said that they broke some law. It's an irreconcilable difference between the people and the police for the stated purpose and the fact that the police is an arm of the state. And so if the state is irreconcilable with the people, then what does that make the police? In other words, if you have a house and you have 3 mice running around in your house, so the 3 mice naturally going to be your enemy until you catch every last, until you abolish every last one of them. So you done got rid of them three, and then 8 months later, you see another mouse in your house. What you going to think? What you going to think is, well, shit, the rat got to be around here somewhere. So what do?
Yeah.
You raise your conscious level and understand that it is the rat that's producing these mice that's plaguing me in my house. So you go after the rat because it's irreconcilable between you and the rat. Now, does a rat naturally belong in your house, or a rat naturally is out in nature, in the environment,
in the environment.
All right, there you go. So you see what I'm saying? So it's an irreconcilable difference because the state is opposed to black and brown people specifically and the poor whites in general. So this relationship about trying to establish this reform the police, you cannot reform the police unless the people become the police. And white people do this. If you go in Kenner, Louisiana, You drive down these main avenues, these main boulevards. What do you see? You see nice houses, smoothly paved sidewalks and streets, and neatly cut lawns and stuff like that, right? Okay, you got driveways. What do you see in some of these driveways? You see a pig cruiser. He lives in the community. He knows Miss Susan across the street. He knows the old lady that who he go and you know, go and get a case of water for every now and again. You know, all of that. So that's what you call community police and people policing and people in the community. So the stakes is high. Now, I'll say this here. I'll say this. Yeah, okay, you had 10 black police officers in the room. Yeah, by law of nature. Yeah, one of them gonna come out. He gonna understand what we said. Look, man, personally, I've been, you know, by one or two of them. And they admitted that, you know, when I used to be on the talk, you know, those, you know, police I'd be using access and talk to, they admitted to me that what I was saying, you know, was true. It was just the way that I was saying that they had problems, you know, using the word pig. And I said, look, it's not personal. I said, you want to understand why we say pig. You have to go back and understand, you know, where the terminology came from. And it's an attitude. It's an attitude that people naturally take on once they have been beaten over the head so many times. You cannot possibly expect a people who've been beaten over the head for a number of centuries to all just turn around and say, yeah, man, I'm cool with that. It don't work like that. When those planes hit those buildings, when those planes were let in and allowed to hit those buildings, white people had blood in their eyes. They didn't want to hear no shit about no Jesus. They didn't want to hear nothing about no Bible, no thou shalt not kill, none of that. They had blood in their eyes. Now, so much so that if you look at the statistics, there was a immediate rise and jump in attacks on Arab people in New York. Okay, now you see if not, or there's a rise in attack on Asians, East Asians, right? Why? These are laws of nature, bro. It's nothing abnormal about that. This attempt on the part of Brother Muhammad was no more than just a token gesture. Look, man, it's clear what it is, man. It's a revolutionary transformation society and whatnot, and reform is no more than just acquiescing to the state. You know, in other words, I'll trade in your political beliefs and your venom towards me for a big house and a nice car. As long as I can continue to rule the type of government that I want to have in place, have the type of system that I want to have in place. That's like loosening the noose to where you're at least comfortable enough to at least breathe. Now, you name me another group that'll say, okay, yeah, well, we'll go for that. No, you want the noose off. Ain't no man in his rational mind would allow another man to put a noose around his neck and then loosen it and say, yeah, you'll be all right. That's like me sitting on your back and tell you at the same time, oh, yeah, I'm going to look out for you. It's bullshit. This is all irrational. It's irrational. It's irrational. It's irrational. You know, Dr. Cotty, you know, I'm quite sure we all know somebody on the police force, you know, that we've been on. Tess, I went to high school with, you know. So I've been knowing somebody 17 years old, 16 years old. You know what I'm saying? We're in our 50s now. It's nothing exceptional about that. It's due to, you know, our relationship. So, yeah, naturally, you some of these cats, man, I ain't going to wash no dishes. I'm going to work in no hotel, you know, whatever, you know, making them a new bedroom. No, shit, I can go to police force and make, you know, X amount of money. I can live comfortable. I can give them a condo and live nicely. And that's due also to the position of power and control in the labor market and the jobs and careers and shit like that. You go to the institution, you go to the university, you go to college. Shit, you go to the best, you end up on $150,000, $200,000 just to go to college. And then you graduate, they stick you at Chase Bank, and, you know, you work there, and you become a vice president, all this kind of shit. You got a career. You made your family proud. Now, those are personal accomplishments, but we're talking collectively here. The police is a contradiction. It's a contradiction. And I explained that on the previous show. We talked about the word police. Where does it go back? It's no coincidence that I say police, and I say the metropolis, metropolitan. I say policy, I say political, because they're all based and come from the same word. The same word. Policy, police, polity, whatever you want to call it. Politics, they got the same base root. Who is it set up for? A specific type of people. In Europe, it was designed and set up for a specific type of people called the landed gentry. you know, the ones who control the planters, who became the planters of America, you know, all this type of shit, you know. But I wanna make sure. Go ahead, bro. Look, man, appreciate your, you know, your question. You know what I'm saying? Do we have another caller, sister? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
We got a caller? Okay, seeing like we might be having some little technical difficulties, but that's all right. It is what it is. It's not necessarily going to stop anything. If we can get the caller on, if we have another caller, so you know, just you know, let me know at any time. But you know, I want to make sure I get in a couple of more of these little things here. When I talked about the prison privatization and how to privatize the prison, you know, it becomes a corporation. And so it becomes a corporation. It's about residual returns, you see. And so, you know, the prisons in essence become commodities, all right. And so that's through, you know, ALEC, all right. And you know, laws benefiting, you know, the companies and corporations of America, right? Now, if you go back and look at these strategies, tactics, how some of these dudes became president. For instance, if you take Bill Clinton. You know, Bill Clinton is this so-called, you know, a lot of black people going, yeah, because he's the first black president. He's black, man. Yeah, you know, they tripping out off Bill Clinton because he's so, I mean, because he smoked, you know, he smoked weed or whatever, blah, whatever. In Atlanta, they call it Billy Clinton, and, you know, whatever, all right? But anyway, Clinton was a brain trust or the face of a bill, you know, the so-called violent crime back in 1994. Which became the largest crime bill in the history of America, and in that bill, they put what $9.7 billion for prison funding, $9.7 billion for prison funding, okay, and of course that evolved out of his presidential run for president, you know, and the Republicans always handcuffed the Democrats, they always. You know, putting them on the spot about being soft on crime and all this kind of shit. So Bill Clinton strategically is a strategical move, you know, to get votes, you know, he, you know, all this type of shit. And he make these promises and he came through it, you know, 2 years later in 94. You know, shit, before him, Ronald Reagan used a black man named Willie Horton in a campaign. You know, Willie Horton is a black man who committed this violent crime, this, that, that. So he used Willie Horton as part of his campaign to win votes. You know, rural whites or whatever who lived on the periphery or lived inside the periphery or off the periphery of the so-called urban community, crime spilling out of the ghetto and spilling over into white suburbia or middle-class neighborhoods. So we use a picture of Willie Horton. Shit, George Bush Sr., he did one better. Shit, he used crack. He used a bottle. He used a plastic bag of crack cocaine in a commercial, to, you know, to scapegoat the criminal system of America, you know, using crack cocaine. So he let you know right here, look, we're gonna use this crack cocaine, and the niggas is the target, and so there's the problem. There's the problems of social ills of America, and you portray this image around the world about you know. The thing that's plaguing America is the drugs. So what you do, you scapegoat black people for white people, and you look at the average dope user ain't black, he white. You know, the average shoplifter ain't black, he white. You know what I'm saying? And so these are by their own facts, by their own statistics. Even Obama used this tactic. You know, criminalizing the race, so to speak, you know, scapegoating black men to do what? To win white women voters in the suburbs, you know, accused once again as a Democratic runner for president of being soft on crime by the Republicans. You know, shit, they switch roles. They switch roles on certain fronts, on certain levels. You see what I'm saying? You know, historically, the Democrats and liberals and Republicans and conservatives and whatnot, they switch roles. You know, Democrats can become conservative, and the Republicans become very liberal. They become very liberal when it comes to niggas. They become very liberal, and the Democrats and liberals become conservative when they come to trying to appease whites. To garner the vote. That's what I'm telling you. So these are tactics. These are clear tactics. These are strategies. Okay. Now, I mentioned the Rockefeller Law. You know, started in '73. A disproportionate of affecting again black and brown people. Nixon makes his declaration of war on drugs, and then you had the Rockefeller Laws in the state of New York. Okay, and so that was just the beginning. That was just the beginning. But you had created the conditions in order to, you know, to legitimize, to have a prison industrial complex, because you can't get a prison industrial complex is irrelevant. It serves no purpose in the state. And so Rockefeller Laws, which has, you know, in more recent times, you know, were reformed or whatever, yet three strikes, you're out. Cold. I believe in the state of California. There's a book written by Michelle Alexander called The New Jim Crow, a very well-researched book, very well-researched book. And she points that out. You know, she points out these laws that we know. Don't take it. We don't need Dr. Phil, Columbo, or nobody expecting to get us to understand who these laws is targeting. You know, we don't need that. You know what I'm saying? One brother was convicted over sitting on some golf club. They gave the brother life. It's third strike. It's ridiculous. These are draconian laws that are designed, again, for those who are seen as the opponents of the white ruling class within the jurisdiction of this country, right? So those are the type of tactics that they use to get around, trying to dismantle the 13th Amendment or clank in the 13th Amendment, because they know they see the writing on the wall. You know, they see these white token gestures being handed out, you know, to the black intellectuals, to those who profess to be leaders. You know what I'm saying? The other thing I want to point out is that, of course, something that Michelle Alexander didn't mention in her book, that the prison system is used as a deterrent for black revolution, for black liberation movement, or those who espouse it, those whose political ideology leans towards the revolutionary transformation of society. And so therefore, you know, the prison system being used as a tool against those who have become political prisoners beginning in the 60s, on into the 70s and the 80s, you know, Matula Shakur, Asada Shakur, you know, the attempted murder of Asada Shakur. As a result of that, Sumudi Ada Cole became a political prisoner who just recently unleashed. And America trying to keep its record good, or its appearance to the international public. So it's been used in these unleashing this form of political prisoners. Sumudi Ada Cole, Eddie Conway, the last two members of the Angola 3 and Angola Penal Colony, you know, to constantly perpetuate its democratic, image around the world, and that of course, you know, we know that this is cosmetics, you know, we know it's cosmetics, you know, but using the prison system as a way to, put down a potential revolution through its leaders, and so they've been thrown into prison in isolation units, control units, 23 hours a day. You know, the objective is to do what? To drive the prisoner to harm himself. Something sort of like a psychic driving, which is a concept that was used by the CIA. In this MK Ultra program, you see what I'm saying? And so one of those political prisoners who recognized that was George Jackson. George Jackson was known, had stated that they may push me out of existence, but they'll never be able to count me among the broken. And that's what George Jackson was talking about. And as a result of the George Jackson murder, 1971 in August, the month after that, you had what was called the prison rebellion in Attica State Prison. You know, as a result of George Jackson, charismatic leadership, who founded the Black Guerrilla family behind the wall, Soledad Prison in San Quentin, you see, prison. And so he had recognized that, and he had recognized the fact that that it was the state and not the people. It was the state versus George Jackson and not the people versus George Jackson, you see. And so that's another one of the purposes of the prison industrial complex on the part of the state to keep itself safe. And of course, as I was saying, how do you create the conditions to, fill these prisons up? You know, the method, the tactic of destabilization, the same strategy that they use when they want to overthrow a government that's not in line with the imperialist, capitalist state of mind. So you destabilize that community. When you destabilize that community, you have chaos. When you have chaos, you have crime. When you have crime, you have potential victims, you know, become prisoners in the prison system. You know, and who is it targeted? Who is it directed? It's directed at basically non-white people, Black and brown people. And these are facts. These are not some rants of a mad Black man who hate the white man, you know, stuck on in the past. No, it is what it is. It is what it is. And, of course, the crack explosion, you know, it was a continued an escalation of the chemical war on Black people, featuring Rick Ross. And the escalation of the street tribe, you know, to drive them more into deadly factional relationship with one another. You know, in the 80s, you know, it was the, you know, most people knew about the, you know, the Crips and the Bloods, you know, without understanding their, you know, even how these street tribes had been founded and what was the original state of purpose and goals of some of these street tribes, or not all, but for the fact, most of them, you know. But we wind it down, and I just wanted to try to get that in. We may come back around to visit this some more, but I hope we've done a well enough job to, you know, get those of us who don't understand what the prison industrial complex is, its motives, why is it relevant, and to keep the conditions like they are, and create crime. Crime and politics go hand in glove. We know that Black on Black crime is a necessary political tool to prevent the social revolutionary transformation of society. And on that note, you know, we say Black Power, Yahuru, tune in next week, same time, 7 p.m. Central. 8 p.m. Eastern, In Defense of the People Radio, brought to you by People's Political Party. I'm your national chairman, Brother Nat Turner. On the ones and twos, our Minister of Communication, Sister Imane Oshun, and our Minister of Defense co-host, Brother Motherland. You know what I'm saying? So, you know, again, we say Black Power in your whole role.
Enough is enough.
Right.
And you are not coming to the people's defense.
That's right.
So if you want us to do better, then damn it, you do better. Do what you say. This country is supposed to be about the land of the free for all. It has not been free for Black people, and we are tired.
One question, protect and serve who? To me it seems that they just quit to observe you, and then they have the nerve to come and disturb you, enforce a curfew to physically hurt you. I heard the patience was a virtue, but how long we gonna disregard the fact is we all talk and practice this new age, trying to rebuke rage, or y'all gonna need some skin more tougher than Luke Cage. Trayvon, Terrence, they gone, perish, on up to George Floyd, see what your laws avoid, and now we gotta find some sort of order before the slaughter gets brought up with mortar report of those who do the unthought. This we gotta put a mandate on. You see my bullet wounds and try to put a band-aid on. As soon as one of us take a stand, they wrong, because you wanna keep us on your plantation. Come on.
Get up. Get up.
Must be a better way.
Where they come for ya,
the sheets are on,
and and I don't see no comfort up. Now you may prepare for 2K, but they prepare for 3Ks. Hold it, come to you later. I see you wants to fight for solidarity, and still in all, I see a lot of y'all ain't hearing me. You know what? The fact is y'all kinda forgot to struggle like activists all-timers. Learn to walk the walk on the path when it's narrow. Can't be crabs in the barrel, this is grabbing the apparel. We should demand order to correct the manslaughter for residents of Flint drinking tan water. And Puerto Rico, what they here for your people?
No.
Let's stay strong and try to keep a hand in it. Transcend it until the next pandemic. Let's go.
Must